Thanks for tuning in to this very special edition of the FPS podcast, headlined by acclaimed comedian and mental health expert Ruby Wax. We'll be exploring a wide variety of topics, including why construction is such a mental health problem, how to manage fear, and Ruby will explain how we can help others. It's a serious topic. If you have half as much fun listening to this episode as I did making it, you're going to love it. First, let's hear a message from our sponsors.
At Central Piling, we have a fleet of continuous flight auger, rotary board and driven rigs of various sizes. This caters for most piling and retaining wall needs. Our team's technical, logistical and operational strengths provide clients with a flexible and reliable design and build solution across England and Wales. We pride ourselves on understanding the environment within which we work and being a responsible contractor. To ensure greater efficiency and meet our growth targets, we are always developing our people, plants and services. We now offer a plant and operator hire service, including ancillary equipment. For more details, please visit centralpiling.com or phone 01787 474 000. That's 01787 474 000.
As you heard in the intro, we have something of a first for the FPS podcast because we have a genuine celebrity joining us in Ruby Wax. And I'm pleased to say that we also have James Rodoni, the managing director of our charity partner, Matesy Mind. Hello.
Hi.
A little bit of background to today. The Federation of Pioneer Specialists had appointed Ruby to be our after-dinner speaker at the annual dinner. Unfortunately, because of COVID, that event has been cancelled. But I'm pleased to say this, that she's joined us on the show today, and she'll be talking...
Just only one half of me.
One half of you.
One half, and when you do the event, I will be bringing the lower half.
Yeah, I can only see Ruby above the waist.
But below the waist, when she's asked, she will be arriving at the real event, okay?
In person.
Just so they know.
Brilliant. So, obviously, we want to explore the mind of Ruby and what she knows about mental health and benefit from her. And this is particularly important in the construction industry. I thought a good place to start would be exploring how you got into mental health.
Well, mental health got into me. I wouldn't have told anybody that I had a mental health problem because I would be scared of being fired. Because, you know, for some reason, I guess people think it's catching. So I never told anybody. And then Comic Relief asked me if they could use a photo of mine to raise some money for mental health. But I thought it was going to be, you know, a small, tiny, tiny picture. Nobody would ever see it. But they put giant posters of me up and down the tube station. And it said on it, 1 in 4 people have mental illness. 1 in 5 people have dandruff. I have both. So I was mortified. They didn't ask my permission. So I thought, what am I going to do? I don't want to get busted. So I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write a show, play, and I'm going to pretend that's my poster. And I didn't have a play, so I had to write one really quickly. And then I performed it, this isn't a lie, in mental institutions for 2 years to make sure my people approved. And they laughed. I used to say the bipolars would say, I laughed, I cried. And so I did that. And then I took it to real theaters. And it turned out it wasn't just 1 in 4 who thought it was funny, but 4 in 4 thought it was funny. Because if you don't have something wrong, your cousin or your mother or somebody does, because it is, you know, 1 in 4. So that's how I got, you know, what's it called? Outed.
Okay.
Yeah, I was outed that way.
Did you do a degree in psychology? It's dangerous looking at Wikipedia too much, but you had an interest in mental health and the mind prior to that, did you?
Well, I have depression. And at one point, about 15 years ago, I had kind of my last severe episode. And I thought, this isn't going to happen again. Or if it is, I want to know when it's coming. I want some warning signs, because suddenly your old personality is gone and then you're replaced by a block of cement. You know, nobody's at home. So I thought, if I could just tell it was coming, I could do stuff, you know, get ready for the cold winter. So I researched everything to do with kind of, the mind and what you could do with it. And it turned out cognitive therapy and mindfulness, I never heard of it, and it sounded way too vegetarian. But that had the best results as far as dealing with depression, ACA, PTSD, ADHD. I have dyslexia, so those are hard for me to remember, but you get the idea, letters. And so I went to find one of the inventors of mindfulness-based cognitive therapy, and he was a professor at Oxford, so I ran to Oxford. I drove, and I wasn't very well. I think I had some pine cones hanging from my head, and he felt sorry for me, but I said, listen, I don't want to study it. Well, I do, but what happens in the brain when you do cognitive or mindfulness? What goes on in there? Because I'm not into the new age stuff. And he said, well, you'd have to get into Oxford and get your master's. So I did. And nobody was as surprised as that man. So I did. And then at the end for my dissertation, I did a show, which had never happened before. And that's how I got my master's. And then I blended in comedy, and that became my next show. So I think if you've got a disease, use it.
Yeah, and it's such a important tool to have, isn't it? That now that you've taken that knowledge and applied it in your own way, and it's such a big issue. There's something I took from one of your books was that more people die from suicide than are killed by terrorists and soldiers and criminals, and I think the country is really only just waking up to how big an issue it is.
I don't understand why, you know, mental has this kind of, you know, derogatory rap to it. Because mental means your brain. It's not your mental. It's your brain. And your brain and your body, it's a onesie. But nothing happens in the mothership that doesn't affect everything else. So if you don't care about mental illness, if you get too anxious or too stressed, which has to do with the construction business, I know that stress hormone, it feeds into your body, it goes through your adrenal gland, and then it takes out your immune system, and then you're open season to certain cancers, diabetes 2, infertility, obesity, premature aging, pretty much everything. So it doesn't just hit here. How you live your life can blow out your system. So I was on Channel 4 two nights ago, and I said, you know, the next pandemic is going to be mental health, but nobody's telling people how to deal with it. So again, you know what I mean? They didn't warn you about the pandemic in time. Now you better get ready for mental health issues. And well, I know what I do. You want to know what I do?
Go on, tell me what you do.
Well, Steve, do I have to ask my own questions? I'm doing that now.
I'll try and be a better interviewer, but you've got far more experience.
I think that, you know, and I wrote another book, which just came out a month ago, called And Now for the Good News, To the Future with Love. And I investigated what's coming that's really positive in business, tech, education, community, health. And I don't mean airy-fairy. I mean, who's doing what in business, you know, to make, who's educating kids so that, you know, they don't burn their little brains out. And I did go visit these schools. I did work in the companies that are, every single area I went to, what's making people flourish is community. You know, we've been living each man for himself, thinking we're communicating, but we're, you know, hunkered in our corners. I would say sending out a tweet like a flare from the sinking Titanic. But we're alone, and loneliness was here before COVID. Mm-hmm. And loneliness is what knocks out most people's mental health. And it affects your longevity. And they say that prisoners would rather have violence inflicted on them than ever be put into solitary. So, you know, humans were born to bond. And that's what we need to get back to. So I have something called Frazzle Cafe, which I do 3 times a week. It's free. And if you log online to frazzlecafe.org, and I'm happy to bring it to your company because we work inside. It's free, and I have about 80 to 100 people. They come online. It has a structure. It's not a free-for-all. I begin and end the meeting with mindfulness just to cool everybody down. I'm not teaching them mindfulness. And then people can speak from the heart. You know what I mean? We're wearing so many masks, and everybody has to be macho or interesting or the most... We've been living like it's too shallow. So these people, I always say, what's the weather condition in your mind? Don't bitch about the news. And you see like old, young men, women, wherever they come from in the colors, you know, different ethnic minority, everybody's on there. And it feels like real. It's community.
Yeah, I think what's we've seen through COVID that all these informal arrangements have happened from like quizzes and, you know, just groups of people, lots of WhatsApp groups and informal virtual arrangements. And we are unconsciously supporting each other, sometimes consciously. And I think, you know, post-COVID, we need to make sure that that happens within our social groups, but also within our workplaces. And I know you've worked with construction in the past. You presented a seminar, I think, to a Crossrail project. I guess they wanted to get in touch because they're aware of what a big issue
mental health. They said there's higher suicide in that construction business than any other business. So they all came in. They were working on Vauxhall Tube Station and Battersea, and they all came in out of those, you know, unspeakable conditions in their, you know, in their orange vests, and they had their hats on. So I started talking, and they're pretty closed. You know, they don't want to acknowledge it. And then I spoke some more. And then at one point, we did mindfulness. I'm not trying to sell it. It's just they were teaching it at Oxford, and they weren't teaching witchcraft. And it is a way to settle, you know, you can look at brain scans. It's a way to kind of settle the, I call it the frazzled mind. If it's not for you, it's not for you. But it is a way to kind of cool that cortisol, because then your heart gets back to normal. Your blood pressure goes down. It's like a tool you can work with. And we have to learn how to do that. Otherwise, we're going to blow our gasket. So anyway, I made them do it. And I thought, Jesus, you know, they're not going to, these are big guys. One guy stood up and he said, I wanted to commit suicide. And I went to a bridge to jump. But these guys, and he pointed to his friends, they called me and they talked me down. And that we've been like a group ever since. Because I spoke out loud. And I have to tell you, about 500 construction workers stood up and gave this guy a round of applause. So it just takes one person to break the ice. And, you know, that's then brilliant. They say there's higher divorce, there's higher suicide. Their working conditions are appalling. They're working in the, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they can't,
let's not
talk about it because they have to be, you know, guys. But once that guy broke the ice, I'm telling you, once you speak human instead of, oh God, I got an image. It's such a relief. People want it. I like people that are vulnerable. I don't like people that go, hey, I'm fine. I'm having a great day. These are not my people.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of factors that make construction industry workers vulnerable. I think there is the machismo side of it, which means that they
that's a hard one to keep up.
I've always had the support. I think, you know, even just eating and drinking the right thing is difficult when you're working the hours that you are. But we need to make sure that the rest areas that people go into are right. And I'd say that construction is moving down the right path, but it's still, I think that the statistics are that suicide's the highest, men under 50 are most likely to die of suicide than anything
ever
else.
Before.
Yeah.
So something has to be done. You know what I mean? We can't just go, oh, well, this is a fad. And so, you know, I go in companies and talk about, you know, it's really important to know why the brain reacts like this. Why is this time different than 50 years ago? And How to Be Human, that book, explained about why we have more negative thoughts than we do positive. So don't blame yourself. And, you know, there's more influence now than ever before. It's not our fault because it's not part of our brain. I mean, you don't have to be a brain surgeon, but just to know is still very primitive, you know, because it didn't fade away. It's still kind of barbaric. And so, you know, back in the day, we had to be on our toes if there was a predator. So you had to think, wait a minute, is this a snake? Is it a stick? You know, and then when language came in, we translated that kind of fear thing as, oh my God, I'm not good enough. Everybody knows I'm a fraud. Oh my God, you know, I'm going to get caught. It happened to be, you know, it's the alertness that you're expressing. And they say out of five thoughts, four are negative. And somebody else said that we're Velcro for negative thoughts and Teflon for positive ones. So in a way, don't blame yourself. You know, it's not, evolution was doing the best it could, but that's not just good enough to say. Yeah. Oh, well, give yourself a break. We are living at a time where we're being besieged by bad news. And that will drive up that, you know, that really primitive part because it's fright. That's our fight and flight, you know. And as I say, the primitive part is still a caveman brain. It doesn't realize the wallpaper's changed. So it can't deal with the complexities of the 21st century. So now we have to bring things in like mindfulness or, you know, explaining to people how to get their stress down. It won't happen automatically. And now with the pandemic, it's going through the roof.
Yeah, you spoke that phrase, Teflon for the positive and Velcro for the negative. You spoke in your book, which I have a copy of here. And there's also a new book, yeah, which is called And Now for the Good News. I wondered if you could remind the people listening about the story of that example and your negative experience.
Well, you know, I can't say it happened at one point. When I do stand up on stage and do my show Frazzled, which is an old show now, I say it's not mental illness, it's being frazzled. That's the contemporary illness, you know, which means you're not stressed. We need stress. We need anxiety. That's what gives people their mojo. But the illness we've got now, not illness, but the situation we've got is now we're stressed about stress and we're anxious about anxiety. This has never happened before, you know, because we're sort of, it's even, there's no rest, you know, even in the 100,000 years ago, we all, after a hard day's hunt, everybody cooled down and sat around the fire. We have no rest. You know, yeah. We're frazzled. Yeah. And but the thing is, when I said to the audience, I've never had a thought in my head that said, what a wonderful thing I'm doing. And may I say how attractive I am today? Never had it. The whole audience went, yep. Everybody has this Velcro for negative thoughts and yeah. Teflon for positive. It's not just me. But I do mindfulness, you know, and it helps. It's not 100%, but it gives you a different relationship with your thoughts. You're kind of more able to stand back and watch them rather mm-hmm. than be in them. I don't believe when I say I'm an idiot or that flips through my mind or somebody doesn't like me. But I kind of know that that's old recordings. You know, maybe I heard it from my teacher or my parents said I wasn't going to work out. Our mind does swing into these kind of negative thinking. And that mindfulness means that, you know, the thoughts come and go if you don't latch on to them. Like some are nice, some are mean, some are pornographic, some are adorable. If you try to latch on and figure it out, like, why does nobody like me? How come they didn't call me back? You'll only get yourself more stressed. So you need mm-hmm. to let it go.
But like you say, the evolution, like from caveman days and we've got animals attacking us, that's forced us to have this fear response or this flight response, hasn't it?
It didn't force us. That's survival. If you had a big smile on your face, you would have been eaten. You know, every animal has that fight and flight. It's just that we live in a time where we can't shut it off because you know, there's news coming in all the time that terrifies you. There's, especially now, there's constant comparison, you know, because you're on social media, I'm not. But, you know, you're hearing about somebody who's doing really well. You know, you're thinking, oh, my God, what's going to nix us next? Is it going to be North Korea or too much salt? It's too much for our brains. So we need to learn how to shut it down a little bit. You know, where's your tipping point? Like, I can't listen to the TV. Maybe somebody can. Or somebody could for 10 minutes, but TV makes it addictive. You know, they'll say, we're coming back in 10 minutes. And Netflix keeps you pushing that button. So we really have to take the throttle and start to go, I can't take it anymore. I got to shut it down.
So continually checking the COVID statistics, probably not great for my mentality. I was actually reading a book. You probably haven't been compared to too many special forces people in the past, but there's a guy called Ant Middleton, who's quite a popular author at the moment that some of our listeners will be familiar with. And he wrote a book called The Fear Bubble. And what he's suggesting in that is breaking down fear into smaller units and trying to understand the moment at which you should be fearful and just sort of accepting that. And so he would go into a combat situation and say, well, right now, up until the time that I have to get my machine gun out, there's no need to be fearful. Actually, just say, right, once I'm engaging in combat, then fair enough, I'm going to be fearful. But for the rest of the time, I could be serene.
Not serene, but, you know, just get on with it. Like, you know, I know it's horrible being inside or, you know, but if you get, oh my God, what's going to happen in a month? Am I going to die? That'll kill you faster than COVID. You know, you might break your leg, but if you think, oh my God, am I never going to walk again? You may give yourself a heart attack. So if he can do that, he's got it. You know, you don't have to do mindfulness. Some people are natural born, you know, they've got enough control of their minds. Yeah. They don't need to practice anything, but most people don't.
Yeah.
So that's why cognitive therapy is good. And, you know, a few other things are pretty good.
So the mindfulness is a breathing exercise, a sort of a relaxation exercise. I mean, is this something that needs a lot of training and development? Or
it isn't just breathing, and it's really easy. The only thing is nobody wants to do it every day, but people go to the gym every day, and we never get a skill unless we repeat it. But it isn't just about breathing. It's more complicated. So we were talking about we're in fight and flight, and we're on it most of the time, and that activates. The reason it does it is not because you're there's an actual part in your brain called the amygdala, and that's the fight and flight button. That gets activated, and then it gushes cortisol, which is a stress hormone. And then you can deal with stuff. You know, you can run or you can take it on. Now, when you take your focus to one of your senses, so you know what those are. It's sight, sound, taste, touch, smell. Whenever you take your focus to a sense, let's say just listening. So I don't know if people at home can just tune into listening. It activates another part of your brain, not the amygdala. It activates the insula. That's the part that gets activated when you're sensing something. You can't have that amygdala on and the insula on at the same time. It's one or the other. So whenever you focus to a physical sense, you know, if somebody's doing a sport, their brain isn't going 100 miles an hour. So in other words, you're tricking your brain. You're not going to stay in sense mode, you know, just feeling the ground or breathing. Your thoughts are going to come, but that exercise of noticing the thoughts coming back, bringing it back to the sense, noticing, and it could be breathing, noticing, being aware of the breath, means that each time you do it, like a sit-up, your that insula, it gets more and more buff, just like a pec does or a six-pack. And it gets so strong I don't know if you have a brain scanner at home, that insula gets stronger. So when the shit really hits the fan, I'm not 100%, but I'm more able to, I may have the quick fight and flight, you know, I may just have it for a second, but I can pull it down pretty quickly so I don't poison myself. Now, that's how it works. And you can do it in martial arts, or now they're teaching athletes to notice what muscles they need when they're, let's say, I don't know, playing tennis, so that when they get on those courts, they're in their body rather than thinking, oh my God, is my wife going to leave me, or where'd I leave the car keys? They're totally, the minute you focus on your body, the thoughts come down a little bit. And that's Tai Chi, and that's, you know, if you do yoga that way, or you do, as I said, martial arts, you're training yourself to take your focus out of the gabbling brain into something physical. That's the only way to do it, unless you're like that guy Ant and you're a natural born person who's insightful enough to know this worries me, this doesn't. I needed the muscle. But, you know, you have to do it every day. It's not hard. You know, you sit, let's say you listen, you know, just let the sound come in, or drink coffee or tea. Taste it. Just taste it. Your mind will take you away. But rather than wander, 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 and then they say 80% of our lives are mind wandering and it doesn't necessarily make us happy, bring your focus back to what the coffee tastes like. And just do it 1 minute a day and you start to have a little more control of how your mind works.
That's great. But sometimes we just lose it, don't we?
Totally. But it's, again, if somebody's shooting at me, I'll have, don't worry, that amygdala will take off. But while I'm loading or while I'm eating lunch, I'm bringing down that stress hormone because it'll just kill me.
One of the best books that I read, apart from yours, was around the Chimp Paradox book about talking about boxing your chimp. I know that's not mindfulness, but it was quite a good way for me to think about sort of containing myself when I got into a situation that the immediate response would really be wanting to have an argument. And it just made me sort of stop and think and take a few breaths.
It doesn't have to be mindfulness. It's just about awareness. You know what I mean? A cognitive therapy isn't mindfulness either. It's noticing that maybe how your mind works, and just by noticing, it kind of disengages you a little bit. Oh, every time I see somebody, I think they hate me. Eventually you go, wait a minute, not everybody hates me. You know, it's awareness of how your mind works. It's a machine, or it's an instrument. Get to know it. Otherwise, it'll drive you instead of you driving it.
I think sometimes we can see it in others as well, can't we? Particularly if you're you're working in and around people, you can spot signs. Or
if somebody's giving you aggro, like they're shouting at you. You know, if you can just cool the red mist in your brain, because we work like neural Wi-Fi, you know, if they're angry, I usually get it, and that's how wars start. But if you can cool your engines, however you do it, you might notice that they've got thoughts in their head probably driving them crazy, you know, telling them. And if you just let them bark, eventually, if you can stay cool, they'll cool down, unless they're really crazy. But it's no good being... It's so hard when you're in the face of anger, because it's an animal thing. Your heart starts racing. But if you do mindfulness, or you get to learn how your mind works, just try to get in the other guy's head. Try to imagine what it's like to be him. You know, that's empathy. And that's something now they're teaching in schools to kids. It means I can really try and understand. I won't get it right, but why do you look at me like that? Maybe your life is crap. And it's these words that I used to cringe at, but compassion and, you know, connecting to other people. I'm back to community. If you're kind, or if you you're open for them and you are really listening, if you listen to somebody, they'll give you everything. You know, if you pay attention, give somebody your attention, that's the key to their, you'll get a raise, you'll get a job, you'll get a wife, you know, if you really learn how to listen. And that takes practice. If you just practice that, then that's pretty good.
But can you tell what might be the problem? So could you tell, for instance, by looking and engaging with someone, whether it's depression or whether it's anxiety? Are there different cues that we should be picking up?
Okay, you're in a different conversation. Yeah, well, mental health is just us, all of us, the frazzle, okay? That's what my Frazzle Cafe is for. Mental illness is like being pregnant or not pregnant, okay? And again, they're teaching teachers in schools, or they should. When somebody's got depression, they don't look sad. So if you really look in their eyes, they're dead. The eyes are completely dead. It might just be for that day, but if you keep noticing it over and over again. Also, decision-making is really hard. And when you have depression, you lose your temper a lot. But if you look in those eyes and they're, you know, they look like kind of a shark, you know, just dead, chances are pretty good they've got real depression, and you better take it seriously, because I don't have to say about suicide again.
At this point, I'd actually like to bring in James Rodoni from Mates of Mind. So Mates of Mind are, as a reminder, are charity partner at the Federation of Partnering Specialists, and they work with some of the businesses, and including my own Central Piling, and deliver training for people. In fact, James, you explain what you do. You can do it far better than I can.
Hi there. So shall I go back and tell where we came from, because that might help a little bit. We were formed out of the Health and Construction Leadership Group, who identified that there was a real need to address mental health within the construction industry a number of years ago, particularly looking at the ONS stats that were coming out that were showing that if you worked in construction, you were nearly four times more likely to take your own life when you compare that against the national average. Well, something needs to be done about that, particularly when you start to think, well, what are the causes? Why construction? What are the issues in there? And you've already touched on a few already, and things like it's a very macho environment, but also it can be a very isolated environment as well. Yeah. You are working hand to mouth sometimes, you know, if you're in the finishing trades, then that can be a real challenging space, because you might have this job but you don't know where the next job's coming from. You've got your bills to pay. There's all sorts of financial worries. You're working from home a lot. You're in a bed sit. You've got time to kill. You're going to go to the pub. You could start drinking. Maybe you go spend time at the bookies, whatever it is. It can lead to really bad behaviors, which can be habit forming and then lead on to much more difficult lifestyle choices people make. And you know, around their nutrition and how they, you know, whether they're getting enough sleep, etc. All of this combined together is a bit of a hot pot for construction.
So how do you work with them? What do you tell them to do? What's your advice?
So what we do is we are enablers for organizations to better support their employees. So we what we tend to do, because not any organization is alike generally. We do a bit of an assessment with them, find out what they are doing, because lots of organisations might have stuff in place. They might have done some training. They might have mental health first aiders. They might have an employee assistance program, but many have nothing. And for those that have nothing, what we tend to do is say, right, the first things to do is to make sure that you do some general awareness around what is mental health for everybody in the organization, so people understand. So what is mental health? When we talk about it, what is it? It's not some sort of something that, it's not even very complicated. It's something we all have and we live with every day, and it's a bit like physical health.
They need to know the difference between mental illness and mental health. Somebody needs to call those shots.
Yeah, so we explain what that difference is as well. What are the signs of poor mental health in people, and then what they can do to self-manage themselves, but also support their colleagues too. So as a baseline, that was where we started as an organisation, with the aim to reach out across the whole of the construction sector, which is about 3 to 4 million people that work in this sector, and try and get them at a very base level to understand about mental health. Yeah. We have now evolved much beyond that, because organisations are kind of like, yeah, we've done that. What next? You know, if someone puts their hand up and says, I've got a mental health problem, what do we do? How do we support them? How can we manage them? How can we make sure that they feel that they are properly supported? Because we know that in the UK, about 300,000 people every year lose their jobs because of mental health, because their employers don't know how best to support them, or they don't feel they're being supported. So,
well, you got to get rid of the stigma first.
In order to address the stigma, they have to understand what is it that we're trying to talk about.
We delivered the Start the Conversation package, which is it's self-delivered. So me and a colleague took all the material. We'd had a conversation with one of your team, James, and understood how to deliver it. You gave us all the material, and really it's about getting some of those basics in place and then getting everybody together to have a little chat and share some of their experiences. And we had some quite powerful stories that came out of those conversations, and I think it's been really helpful for our culture within our business to do that.
But that's, again, making community among them, you know, that camaraderie is, again, forget, you know, you don't have to do mindfulness, but if they feel like they've got each other's backs and they care about each other, that's almost good enough. You know, it's not like I'm going to keep it a secret. If you help some guy who's got depression, it'll make you feel a lot better, and he'll really like you, because you're right, $100 billion is lost every year in business in the UK. Because of, you know, a kind of mental health issue.
Yeah, well, you know, 44% of all staff sickness is due to anxiety, depression, or stress. And what we do, and what our aim working in the construction sector is, to change that culture, break down those barriers, change that culture right across the industry. Because that's the only way we're going to allow people to kind of put their hand up and go, I'm not okay, and seek the support either from their employer or from their colleagues, or to go off and find the support themselves, but to make sure that they feel comfortable enough to say, I'm not all right, even if it's just to themselves, and go off and get the help that they need. That is
and where we if are. You notice, like, your colleague has depression, you know what I mean, and you notice it, you know, they need to know what to do. I mean, that's always people ask me, what do I do? And if they don't want help, there's nothing you can do, because there's so much shame affiliated with a mental illness. Like if you had diabetes or you know, shingles, would you be embarrassed? So, you know, mentally, like schizophrenia or Alzheimer's, you wouldn't go, oh, come on, you remember where the car keys are. It's a disease. You know, so they have to understand the mental, mental is such a bad word. They have a brain disease and they need help. I mean, the real thing. I don't mean somebody who's anxious. That's something else.
We train so many people, don't we, to be a first aider for physical injuries, and nobody would walk past somebody with a broken leg. And this is the equivalent. And we do need a lot more mental health first aiders within the construction industry, because we've talked about why it's such a big problem, and those issues shouldn't be ignored.
I think what's really important is, and what makes Makes in Mind different to other organisations in the space, is we are not trying to deliver one silver bullet that says, right, if you do this thing, that's going to solve your problems. It's multifaceted. We've got that general awareness. We've got manager training. We've even got CEO and director kind of awareness programs that we can run. We also have mental health first aiders. We've got that support. We've also got supervision and support in there for mental health first aiders, because quite often organizations put that provision in place, but they don't know how to support the people that are taking on all this kind of stuff from the rest of their colleagues. So we've got to make sure they're properly looked after as well. So only by sort of doing all of these things and consistently doing this and supporting people over time, because new people come in and out of your organisation all of the time, that's when we'll really start to see that shift, and we'll start treating mental health like we do with physical health and safety in the workplace. And suddenly it'll become like, oh yeah, we've got to do this. We've got to have this in place. And it's just normal. It's not ever questioned.
At the moment, you must be getting more calls than ever, James. I would suspect, unfortunately, because of COVID.
So there's some research that was recently done. It showed that in the workplace, 67% of people are reporting higher levels of stress. 57% say they've got higher levels of anxiety. 54% are more emotionally exhausted. And 42% are saying that their overall mental well-being has declined. And the reasons behind that are social isolation, their physical health, remote working and the stresses of that, financial worries with people being made redundant, and not necessarily the people you work with, but maybe their partner or other family members, and their relationships from being at home with people or being under a lots of external stress. And of course, some people are dealing with bereavement now. I've had family members that sadly passed away, and the funerals have been very unusual affairs that we couldn't all attend, etc. And so it adds a whole level of difficulty and challenge to our otherwise what would have been a very, you know, sad but, you know, a usual thing that we could kind of be a part of. So anyway, all of these things are making it difficult. We've seen our demand for our services increase, but sadly, the number of crisis calls has really increased dramatically as well. So that's obviously a clear sign that people are needing more help at the moment.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear about your loss, James. Thinking creatively about positive solutions. I think by engaging in different sorts of work, having communities coming together, it can create a lighter mood. It can improve our mental health. I wrote a piece recently about doing some voluntary work, and we've launched a mentoring scheme. I realised that
actually, there's a lot that people can gain from doing voluntary work. We actually see the benefits within businesses when people undertake that. Now, I'm not sure what the chemical processes are going on, but I know that if somebody has got something in their lives that is rewarding, then we're going to see lots and lots of benefits. So I'd certainly encourage people to get involved with charity work and so on.
You know, in a lot of new businesses, I was saying, you know, I've researched where it's really working. Everybody has a purpose, you know, so they choose either to help a local charity or they, you know, choose an environmental, so that their policy is purpose in front of profit. But when you have purpose, you work harder. So you're right. You know, if you're engaged with other people, that's mental health. That'll ignite, you know, of that oxytocin, this feel good chemical, and that makes you live longer.
and have fun. You know, I come into the office today. We had health and safety meeting, but and that obviously is very serious stuff. But at the same time, we're a group of people that are also having fun and a joke together, and which is really important. It's part of the reason we want to go to work, and it's part of the reason we miss being physically together, because I think sometimes you can lose a little bit of that from a sort of remote perspective. So that's really important that we stick with that. And I mentioned before we came on air actually about banter, James, and be interested for your view on how that how you walk that line within construction, because sometimes it can be destructive, can't it, when you step over the line. So where's the balance between having fun and a joke and then going into a place which then becomes maybe abusive? I don't know if you've got any advice for the listeners to manage that.
I think, you know, the more you work with people, the better you'll have a sense of how far you can go with a bit of a joke and a laugh with somebody. But I think you've just got to be aware of how other people are reacting, and not necessarily even the person that you're having fun with. It may be other people that are there. I think, you know, we just have to be conscious of how you are being perceived and the impact of what you're doing and saying may have on other people. And it may be all good fun and laughter. And it's so important to do that and have that. There's absolutely a place for it. But I think it's just being aware and conscious of how that is impacting on other people around you. You know, if you're not sure, then you know, kind of back off would be my advice. And I mean, I before I worked for Mates in Mind, I worked for Royal British Legion Industries, where I was supporting veterans with physical and mental health issues, alongside a whole range of other support. And you know what, the military, they've really got that kind of dark humour down to a T. They can really get it, and they can really do it well. But even they know actually when it's time to back it off, and they really kind of understand when it's perhaps not going to be appropriate.
Yeah, I suppose it's understanding the individual, isn't it, and looking at their response, and like you say, knowing when to back off and say, okay, maybe that's not right for this particular situation and this particular person.
And also the people around as well. Because you may be having a great joke about something with your mate, but you might be really offending the three or four people that are also listening to what you're saying. So I think there's some of that we need to kind of be conscious of too.
Well, I've had fun today, and I think it's been really good for my mental health. I appreciate that a lot of the listeners tuning in today probably aren't familiar with our podcasts. Hopefully some of them will be interested in the other productions that we've done, and please take a look and let us know what you think. But Ruby and James, thank you so much.
Thanks for doing the most important thing on earth, talking about mental health.
I thought that was a really insightful conversation. I hope that you agree, and I'd be so grateful if you would share it via email and social media with as many contacts as possible. It's such an important topic, and the more we talk about it, the more it reduces the stigma. And as a consequence,
we can help address mental health problems. Also, don't forget that you can subscribe to the FPS podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, so the next episode is waiting for you as soon as it's uploaded. Till next time, thank you.